the hottest party in the summer is upon us. And we're going to watch some of our favorite matches to kick off SummerSlam weekend. And you're watching, nope, you're listening to On the Web episode of the Wrestling Guys podcast. And that starts right now. All right, all right. Coming to you from the Forgotten Borough, Staten Island, New York. This is the Wrestling Guys podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things in the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We're your host. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, beautiful Chris Never Miss Eaton. Shout out to Neely the party. Like I said, biggest party of the summer upon us. We're going to watch some of our favorite SummerSlam matches, but we don't do anything until we start the clink to seal the deal. Feeling good. Summer is here still. We're killing. Enjoying that heat. I give a shout out and a rest in peace to beautiful Bobby Eaton, who just passed last week.
Yeah, rest in peace, beautiful Bobby, of course, from the Midnight Express and a successful solo career. One of like the unsung legends of wrestling, really underrated. And if you listen to anybody within the industry talk about him, all they say is how just good of a person he was and how great of a talent he was. So, yeah, definitely lost the legend. I think he was only in his 60s, right?
Good. Well, great as a hell of a hand, as they say. But I love the stories. I know Jericho has said it a bunch of times, but everybody's like, he had a bag with just about anything you needed. So, like, oh, I need a new pair of socks. He had it. I need something, you know, I need a needle and thread. He had it. Like, Band-Aids. He had everything in his bag. One of the most nicest guys. Arn Anderson has said repeatedly, his best friend in the business. Great wrestler. He just lacked the charisma and the promo skills. I think that's what could have put him over the top. I mean, they tried, you know, a couple matches with Ric Flair, and, you know, he had a run with the television title. I remember him, the best memory I have of him is being with Steven Regal as the Blue Bloods. He was Earl Robert Eaton, and that was cool. But yeah, man, rest in peace to beautiful Bobby. Another one that we lost this year, man, Paul Orndorff too. I mean, like, we're just a lot of fallen Hall of Famers, unfortunately. Bobby Eaton should be in the Hall of Fame. Whether that's part of the Midnight Express or as a singles wrestler, I think probably going as part of the Midnight Express. But hopefully that happens.
Stan Lee is still around, right?
Yeah. You know, so there's still time for that. But I hate the posthumous things. It kind of sucks, especially like a guy like Vader, too, who's probably going to go in, you know, next couple of years. But could have did it when he was still here. But these things are unforeseen. We can't help it, right? I love the idea we have for today. I do. We're talking about it. We're going to take two of our favorite SummerSlam matches, watch along today. But before we get into that, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that, so last episode, if you listened, we talked about our top five NXT call-ups that were pretty much botched on the main roster and they're nowhere to be found. And my number one, and your honorable mention, right, was Bray Wyatt, the Wyatt family. Yep. And a few days later, he gets his release from WWE.
Do you think we jinxed him?
I felt terrible. I almost tried to get his phone number and call him and say, I'm sorry. And we said, like, if he got released tomorrow, which is funny because he got released about 3 days later, but it was like when we recorded. And I said, if he got released tomorrow, it'd be like, oh, man, he was great. But damn, they could have did so much more with him. And that's the first thing I fucking said. I think I texted you like, God damn, they fucking released him. Yeah. They just ruined, like, the terrible. I know he was going through some things. I know Brody Lee's death, one of his best friends, really hit him hard. That being said, though, he was ready to come back up until, I think, a week before he was released, and they didn't know what to do with him. Apparently, he was having clashes with creative because if you listen to anybody backstage or any wrestlers or read any wrestlers' tweets, he's one of the most creative dudes in the backstage, and he's one of the locker room leaders. And they said that he was very protective of the Fiend character, and he didn't like what they were doing with him. And it's understandable. He created the damn thing. He took it to the moon. You know, something as stupid that could have been was the Firefly Funhouse he made into just gold every week. Yeah. And he's very protective of the character, given that, you know, they made him to Goldberg, all this other bullshit at times. And just with Clash and Creative, they decided to release him. And you won't hear it here first. I'm sure a lot of people have said it already. It's one of the biggest mistakes WWE has done this year. Besides, I mean, a number of the other releases that happened. This one for me, though, across the board, is a mistake, and they're going to regret it.
100% agree. I think that it was shocking to say the least. With all the cuts that they've been making in the releases, and you hear about it being budget cuts, and there was rumors of WWE getting ready to sell, I didn't think that Bray Wyatt would be on that list to get cut. And I think that him being released shows that there's probably a very short list of people in the WWE who are actually safe right now. I think anybody at any time could probably get released from them right now. There's a lot of different reasons that people are speculating as to why he got released right away. Is like you said, you know, people like, oh, he's been misused, and you know, WWE didn't handle him right. Ronda Rousey made some comments that I don't know if I agree with, but she basically attacked the fans and said that it was basically the fans' fault for him getting released. And I don't think I agree with that, but she was saying that it was because we were, I say we, I don't mean like me and you personally, but like the fans, just kind of turned on him and like were booing him, was saying that he was boring, was saying that, you know, he kept losing. And I don't agree with that, because I don't think there was ever a time where the fans didn't appreciate Bray Wyatt. I think we just wanted to see more. We wanted to see WWE put him in a better spotlight, not just in a position where he was just set up to lose all the time. Even though he was Universal Champion, I still think he, even though he had a decent run, I still think he was set up to lose a lot.
Oh yeah, it could have been so much better. I mean, you know, right. We talked about that. I mean, the loss to Goldberg alone, when you hear about how he was going to be Goldberg, but Goldberg wanted him to have the superhero win for the kids, so they changed it. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but that's like the prevailing opinion. You know, and real quick about Ronda Rousey, that seems to be her shtick now, right? Going after the fans. Yeah, and I don't know if it's heel work or...
No, it's not.
You had a year run, which was actually pretty good for somebody who's just starting out, and you're like been shitting on the fans ever since. Like, when she comes back, if she don't, then you better come back as a heel, because no one's gonna embrace you. You know what I mean?
Like, you know what? I'll be perfectly fine if she never comes back, to be honest. Yeah, whatever with her. You know, she had her opinions. It's fine. Apparently, Bray Wyatt has made some texts about, feeling like he was being bullied by fans and stuff, which happens. You know, that does happen. Nobody's denying that. Jim Cornette, listening to him, and I even told you about this, he made a point, and I think there's some validity to it, where he was asked what he thought, and he said, well, what did you expect? They burned him alive to ash. How do you come back from that with his character? Like, the only thing they could do was let him go, and, you know, he can go somewhere else, and they can figure out a way to bring him back if they want, but he felt that they had just gone too far with the character to bring him back, and that they just had no other choice but to release him. And then there's a report out there that apparently John Laurinaitis told him it was budget cuts. So I don't know what the truth is, but I think it is a mistake. And I hope they figure out a way to bring him back. Chances are he'll just go to AEW like everybody else.
I mean, you know, Vince makes this comment on an investor's call saying, well, if AEW wants more of my guys, we'll be happy to give them to you. And I don't know if that's like a tactic of you're going to overload your roster and you're not going to know what to do with it. But right. I mean, at this point, you're just feeding top-level guys to this company that's starting out, that's now starting to break a million viewers, and you're going to give him a top guy like that, or Malakai Black, or Andrade, or Miro, and all these other guys, and you're like, what the fuck's going on over there?
Or Brian Danielson.
I think the budget cut thing is just a blanket statement. Yeah. If you listen to Malakai, formerly Aleister Black, I just listened to him recently on Talk is Jericho, and he talked about when he received his release, Laurinaitis called him, and Laurinaitis and him were actually friends. And he's like, yeah, man, I can't believe it either. This is kind of crazy. But yeah, we're giving you your release. And it's like budget cuts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. You know, I don't think that's what it is. You know, some people are now saying, yeah, they're gearing up for the sale. Others is, yeah, the roster was bloated. But my thing is like, and kudos for John Cena for saying this, talking about WWE is relying too much on returning stars. They really are. You're not building up any type of future, you know, and you think about like, you know, and we talk about these podcasts all the time, right? And they're reliving all these old pay-per-views, and you're talking about, oh man, a young Rock who's starting out on this Survivor Series, and Stone Cold, you know, 25 years of Austin 316. It's like, there's nobody in that ring right now besides Reigns, because Cena's a returning guy who's a part-timer, but it's like, nobody there that's like, okay, this guy's set up for the long haul. You know, even a guy like Big E, who won the Money in the Bank, he's won the case, and he hasn't really done anything in this build-up to SummerSlam. So right. I don't keep saying like, oh, I think he's going to cash in on the Lashley-Goldberg match. I don't know if he will now, you know, just because there's no build-up. You know, they had Apollo Crews with his nice little build-up, only to drop the IC title on a Friday the week before SummerSlam to Nakamura. You know, there's just no – I can't look at the roster right now and say like, this guy is going to probably going to be the champion in the next year. Or it's probably – because if it's not either Lashley or McIntyre or Reigns – I really don't know anybody who's set up to go for that top level push. And they're just releasing motherfuckers left and right. Excuse my language. But it's like, it's insane to me that you're not investing in the future. And you're talking about this now, revamping NXT to make it younger. I mean, how much younger can you get? You know, you signed all these indie guys. You know, Adam Cole's contract is expiring after SummerSlam. They're talking about there are certain people who don't even want to sign him. You're out of your fucking mind. There's a guy there. Whatever. He's undersized, but he has the charisma. He has the promo. He has the in-ring work. And you just lost Daniel Bryan. There's your guy right there. Plug him right in.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Pete Dunne, a contract also up after SummerSlam, and these guys are like, oh my God, I can't believe this. Their contracts are up. Who's working there? Who's not doing their job? You should be releasing and firing those people. You know, I don't know. And again, this is stuff, you know, beyond my pay grade. I don't work there. I don't know what's going on. But when you see it from a fan's perspective, it's like, what the fuck's going on over there? Either you're selling the company or you don't give a fuck because you're making all this fucking money anyway.
You know? They are making a shit ton of money. And yeah, you know, we're not on the inside, and I'm sure there's variables that we don't understand. But even if you have a bloated roster, why are you cutting the guy that sells your top merch? Why are you cutting the guy that's a draw? Why are you cutting someone who is unique and talented and creative and somebody that we want to see in a main event spot? Why are you getting rid of him? You know, and you can say it's the cut budget or it's to save money. But what about if your roster is so bloated, how about all those people that are just not doing anything? You know, like, I don't know. I don't understand why they would want to cut someone like Bray Wyatt or even someone like Adam Cole, like, decide not to bring him back. Apparently he met with Vince McMahon about his future there. But when you see all the NXT releases, some of those, I think those are the ones that kind of make sense. Like, we all respected Mercedes Martinez, but they let her go probably more because of her age than anything else.
Yeah.
Bronson Reed was the surprise because I thought he could have been something. But then when you look at the rest of that list, it's like, you know, Bobby Fish, I thought kind of sucked because I like him, but you're like, all right, you know, I can see where they're kind of trimming the fat. Cutting Bray Wyatt is not trimming the fat. That's just like, what are you doing?
No, you
like, I don't get that.
You're getting rid of one of your leaders. You're getting rid of one of the better creative minds you have backstage. You're getting rid of one of the most over guys in terms of merch sales, in terms of audience. You know, and maybe sometimes, especially a guy like Bray, he's getting so frustrated. It's like, dude, I got to go.
Yeah.
You know? But then you see these cryptic tweets where people are thinking that he might have resigned already. And maybe it's just the whole thing. You know, listen, we saw that happen with Joe, too. They released Joe, and then a month or two later, they re-signed him strictly for NXT. He's coming back for TakeOver. You know, this TakeOver is a big question mark for me. And I don't want to get too much into it because I know we got something else planned. But, like, for me, this TakeOver is, like, a transition. Because now you're hearing that they're all going to go to this, like, younger thing. You know, they only have a few matches announced, which, you know, you don't need that many. But it'd be interesting to see how this pans out, especially the Adam Cole and O'Reilly match. The Joe and Cross match, like, you know, I'm thinking Cross is going to lose because he's on the main roster now. But, like, you know, especially with Joe, who didn't plan on being a full-time guy right away, in terms of going younger, what are they going to do? Are they going to completely change the set? Are they going to do this? I just kind of feel like this is a transition period. I also think that people like I think Dakota Kai might actually go over as well, because I think Gonzalez may be coming up, you know, like things like that here and there. It's just very interesting the direction they'll go after this takeover.
Yeah, it is interesting, especially when you hear that they want to go younger and Samoa Joe is probably going to be their first three-time NXT champion, and then to see where it goes from there. But, you know, to be honest, this whole revamping that they want to do, again, there's a lot of rumor and speculation as to why they're doing this. Apparently, depending on what you read and what you want to believe, Triple H is getting a lot of the blame for losing the AEW war, if there ever really was one. I personally would not be surprised if Vince McMahon took a look at NXT and said, NXT is better than Raw and SmackDown, and we need to stop that. And right. That's why he's doing this. Like, that would be my guess.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. I mean, that's, you know, maybe it is stroking the ego, because they are saying that there are people who probably, if Triple H and Stephanie would take over, probably wouldn't have jobs no longer, so they're trying to put themselves over and kind of shit on Triple H. And maybe he's listening to him. Who knows, man? I mean, it's very – I mean, we've had a week to think about it, and it's like it still, like, scratches my head when I'm like, yo, what? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's going on here, man? You know? And I don't know what's going on here. So, I mean, listen, time will tell.
Yeah, to put a bow on it, I like I texted you a few days ago, all of these things that they are doing, you know, with the releases and the revampings, it better be worth something for them, because it's not like WWE's must-see TV right now. It's not like you have to tune into Raw and SmackDown every week. So all of the changes that they're making, it better amount to something, because AEW, as far as a wrestling fan base goes, is creeping up on them. You know, with the rumors of Daniel Bryan going there, with the rumors that CM Punk is going to debut this Friday on Rampage,
right.
It better be worth it. These changes and these cuts, they better come out on top of this. And so they can say to us, we told you so, instead of us going to them and saying, we told you so. You know, like, there just better be a solid plan. And I hope it works out for the better for them, even though it means that there are guys that and ladies that we wanted to see that got released. But it better turn into better television for them.
Oh, man, I'm with you 100% on that. I hope it does lead to something, and not just being like, hey, like, you know, I hope we're not doing this next August 18th. That's the time we're recording it now. And we're just like, oh, man, whatever happened to this? You know, whatever. Yes. I really hope it doesn't happen like that. But anyway, you know what? On a brighter note, which is also odd because SummerSlam's on a Saturday this year, but whatever. SummerSlam is this Saturday. I'm really looking forward to it. I think they got some killer matches on there. It'd be cool to see real quick if Eva Marie and Alexa Bliss actually wrestle. Not that that's my favorite match I'm looking forward to, but I'm looking forward anyway. It's at Allegiant Stadium. There's going to be fans, hopefully. I think Vegas just put the mask mandate in place, so you'll probably just see a lot of masked up fans there. But biggest party of the summer, one of my favorite pay-per-views of the year, one of the 10-pole franchises, SummerSlam. And we were talking about, you know what we should do? Hate for Peacock aside, I was like, we should really just take two of our favorite all-time SummerSlam matches and do a watch-along. You pick one, I'll pick one. You know, if there's like a personal connection to it, a little backstory to it, and just really why. I have this thing, I don't know about you, Chris, but like when there's like a big pay-per-view that comes up every year, so whether it's like WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, SummerSlam, I like to go back and watch like classic matches from select like SummerSlams, you know? So I always start with like one particular match, and then I kind of just spin it off into different ones, maybe ones I haven't seen in a long time. Like today, I showed my son Shawn Michaels versus Hulk Hogan, where, you know, Shawn Michaels just completely was just overselling it. You know, just, you know, here and there. So the one I chose is probably the one that's probably the nearest and dearest to my heart, probably one of all-time favorite matches as well. But Mr. Perfect versus Bret the Hitman Hart from SummerSlam 1991 for the Intercontinental title. First of all, hands down, if I had to pick probably a one and two of my all-time favorite Intercontinental champions, Mr. Perfect is number one, and I think Bret Hart's number two, maybe Shawn Michaels at three, I don't know, all 90s champions. But for me, my uncle had recorded this on a VHS tape. So at the time, I was a wrestling fan, but I wasn't like a hardcore wrestling fan. And he's like, yeah, you got to watch this pay-per-view. And I remember watching it. I was like, oh, it's cool. And this is the second match of the night. We just realized this too now, just before we turned it on. And I remember watching this match and being like, yeah, this match is incredible. And I think it started my love for Bret Hart. It started my love for the Intercontinental title, which is still my favorite title to this day. I mean, don't get me wrong, world title is great, but for me, the Intercontinental title has always been the one that always steals the show. If you're Intercontinental champion, you better go out there and put on a fucking show. That's always been my opinion. And it just stole the show. And I remember taking this tape from my uncle and just playing it like crazy. I think I still have the tape somewhere. Super old. But for me, this is what turned me into like the first full-fledged like wrestling fan. All right, now I'm going to watch it every week. You know, this is it. You know what I mean? And I'm looking at it, and I was looking at a little backstory. So first of all, if you want to get better chemistry in a ring, Mr. Perfect and Bret Hart is, I think Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, has said that Bret Hart was his favorite opponent, and I think Bret Hart said vice versa. I think him and he said Owen was a close second. But I got this, Bret Hart was on the bump last year talking about this match. And he actually, I'm going to pull out a quote real quick. He didn't just say real quick. I'll be honest, I think it didn't matter who was on the card that day, we were going to steal the show. Kurt and I had so many great matches in the years before SummerSlam, I would dare say that probably a lot of our other matches were better than anything we did at SummerSlam. However, and this is jumping around a little bit, but Kurt Hennig had a pretty severe back injury.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
So he was kind of limited. It was ailing him, but he still put on a great match for Bret. I mean, you're passing the torch, sort of passing the torch to Bret. At that point, you know, maybe his cardio wasn't there where he wanted to because he couldn't really train But, I mean, I don't think anybody topped that match that entire night. Still one of my favorite Intercontinental title matches of all time. And Bret Hart also talks about how, as they were leaving, he said everybody, quote unquote, came out to the dugout to watch them work, which is a huge compliment, right? I mean, you're talking about two of the best to ever do it. That's another thing. I mean, there's a lot of context to that too, right? You know, Bret Hart's just coming off WrestleMania 7, losing the tag titles with Jimmy Anvil, Neidhart to the Nasty Boys. This is his first singles run, his first significant push, and you're going right up against Curt Hennig. Now, his back is problem. He's not with Bobby Heenan. He's with the coach.
Yeah.
John Tolos, I believe his real name is at the time. That didn't really last long, that pairing. No. It was also very odd that they broke him off of Heenan that just for, you know, for this few, I don't know, what, a month or two maybe?
Yeah, I don't even remember why that happened. But I do know that this is Curt Hennig, because of that injury, this is Curt Hennig's last match for a while until Survivor Series 92.
Right.
When he would team up with Randy Savage.
And the back injury would be something that would bother him for a while. I mean, he would do that. Yeah. He would be out for a while, do commentary, comes back in 92. He leaves. I know he cashed in a Lloyd's of London policy. He was out for a while. He teased coming back in like 95, 96, never really did it. And then he went to WCW. He was working there for a while, came back. I remember that, man, when he came back to the Royal Rumble that year. And oh, true, that was short-lived. He was released shortly after the plane ride from hell. That was it for me. Unfortunately, he would pass away suddenly. For my book, though, if I got to say, I think Mr. Perfect probably, I think along with him and maybe Ted DiBiase are two of the probably the greatest heels to never hold the world title.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good argument there. Mr. Perfect was great. I mean, who had better vignettes than Mr. Perfect?
Vignettes were fantastic. And that's interesting. How are you always on point with swiping the gum out of your mouth every single time?
Yeah, I mean, everything he did was just so fun and so entertaining and so cool. And also the fact that if you watched the documentary they did years ago, The Life and Times of Mr. Perfect, apparently all of those vignettes where he was doing all of those sports activities, that was him doing them.
Right.
You know, with the exception of like throwing the football, catching it himself. Like, but you know, when he was bowling, which was my favorite one, the bowling, that was him. You know, throwing the darts, getting the bullseye, that was him. Shooting the basketball, that was him. So like, he was just a one of a kind talent. And you know, you hear a lot of stories about him as a person too. He was a big prankster and, you know, a great guy in the locker room. Certainly a legend and somebody that I have always, you know, respected and loved watching. And he's definitely one of the greatest Intercontinental champions. Definitely, that's my favorite Intercontinental title that he comes out here with. And oh, yeah, I remember this match, and this is what kickstarted Bret Hart. You know, Bret Hart was off to the races after this. There was no stopping him.
Yeah, I mean, he was, I mean, he definitely was absolutely perfect. How you doing? No, but I'm just saying, you know, he's definitely one of those guys that it's like, you know, and I like how they, I forget who actually called him this, but they called him the Dennis the Menace of the backstage. Just because his propensity to be ribs and pranks and real friendly guy. And then a hell of a hand, as Stone Cold like to say, but it's, with his accent. But let's go to this match. I'm going to start it with Perfect is in the back with Sean Mooney and Coach about to cut a promo. This is at 16 minutes, 50 seconds. So for those of you at home, we're at SummerSlam Season 4, Episode 1. Fuck you, Peacock. I'm going to say it every time. Chris, you with me here? We queued up?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
All right, let's start it in 3, 2, 1.
You did it right, Mooney. The greatest Intercontinental champion of all time. History will be made tonight. Excellence of execution versus perfection. Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect. Well, Bret the Hitman Hart, the Intercontinental belt says wrestling champion on it. And for you to be a champion, you have to be perfect. You are excellent, but you're not perfect. There's only one Mr. Perfect, and you're looking at it. Coming up, a battle for the Intercontinental title.
The whistle
title
is so
Let's
fucking
go
annoying.
Back to ringside.
Yeah.
Love the little graphic in between. Also, here I hear Bret Hart's theme song, one of my all-time favorites.
It's better with that effect in the front of it, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, so we got Bret Hart coming out here. Lovely pink jacket with his nice epaulettes there. Looking great. I have those Bret Hart sunglasses somewhere. A friend of mine got them for me for my birthday one year.
Nice.
He was supposed to come to the Wrestling Universe out here in Queens, New York. I was trying to buy tickets and maybe have him sign them, but they sold out pretty fast.
There's Carlos and that guy they're doing the documentary about. In the front row.
I worked with Carlos, actually, at Toys R Us. Great guy. Worked together. His friend Vladimir, super fan. They're making a documentary about him. Here comes Mr. Perfect. Carries the towel. Throws it over the back. Always my favorite.
Do you remember the one where when Bobby Heenan was walking right behind him and Mr. Perfect threw the towel and he didn't realize it at first, but then like at the last second caught it behind his back?
Yeah.
That's just like...
My favorite perfect. One, and it's actually in King of the Ring 93 where he throws it behind the back and it lands perfectly on Mr. Hughes' shoulder. I can't get better than that. It's just amazing. And look, he tops over the ring and the belt falls off. That's great.
There's a lucky little fan there. I miss these days of wrestling, honestly.
Absolutely. I'm with you there 100%. Let's see, holding the belt up for him. You little bastard. You know, I always think that if I'm a wrestler, what would I wear? And I don't know if I'm wearing tights, maybe the singlet like Mr. Perfect. I'm definitely not wearing the trunks because that's not flattering.
No, I would wear like the long tights, like similar to what Brett has on now. Like I would do that.
I would think that I would do the Kevin Owens and wear the basketball shorts with the cutoff. Just so, you know, more my body type.
Well, it works for him, definitely.
Look at this. This is Madison Square Garden, 1991, packed house. Oh, did you hear that this year's Survivor Series will be at the Barclays Center?
I did hear that.
And tickets will be bought because I definitely got to go for sure. I've never been. Survivor Series is the only one of the big four I've never been to.
Yeah, I've never been to one either. Hopefully they'll have some Survivor Series matches.
I mean, I'm with you there. Look at that. There we go. Tackle, drop down.
Oh.
All right.
Headlock takeover there. Nicely done.
Mr. Perfect's hair is already furrowed out. It's amazing.
Yeah. Very similar to what we see with Dolph Ziggler now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dolph Ziggler to me.
His is a little longer now, but.
Dolph Ziggler to me is like the second coming of Kurt. To me, he can have a good match with his body.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of Dolph Ziggler as well, man. There we go. I feel like I'm a little behind you. Where are you in the time code?
I am at 2055 and counting.
Oh, man, I'm way behind. I'm going to try to catch up to you. I'm going to go to 2105. A lot of headlocks. A lot of headlocks happening.
Yeah, actually, you were right on the money.
Oh, dope. You know what, though? You don't see a lot of these anymore. Headlock takeovers, you know, wear down hold, you know, really stringing the match out, you know?
Definitely not. I think the fans definitely don't have the patience for that anymore, but I don't think the wrestlers have the patience for it anymore either. Yeah. You know, this new generation of indie wrestlers, and, you know, not to shit on them, but
no,
it's just you can tell that it's choreographed for the next spot. It's not organic at all.
I'm really getting tired of it, to be honest with you. You know, it's spots for the sake of spots. I'm tired of seeing moves where that should end the match, but leads to a near fall. You know, I don't know how many times somebody can get kicked in the face. In the UFC, you get kicked in the face once, it's probably a knockout. But in AEW and WWE, you get super kicked 80 times in the face and still kick out at 2.5. You know, it's crazy. I mean, like chain wrestling like this, and yeah, it's boring to most. Like, what the fuck? He's has him in a headlock right now. But this is magic because you're not starting off doing superplexes and all this crazy shit to start off. You're gonna, you know, bring it along. I mean, this match here, I think it's the longest match of the night. I think it's 18 minutes that they have. Besides, then, it's even longer than the main event. It is the longest match of the night. And rightfully so, because they're the two best workers out there.
And they're doing it for a reason. You know, everything that they do, speaking of Mr. Perfect and Bret Hart, and what makes them two of the best ever, is that everything they did had purpose.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, so, you know, it may be boring at first, but it's all about building anticipation for what comes next.
Right. And what I love about it, too, and we can't listen to it right now because it's on mute, but you have three Hall of Famers on commentary tonight, Bobby Heenan, Gorilla Monsoon, and Roddy Piper. And throughout this match, if you guys listen to it with the sound on, you'll hear, like, Piper say stuff like, oh, he's, like, right now he has the legs. He's like, oh, he's going to put on the sharpshooter. Is he softening up his legs for the sharpshooter? Like, they're all talking about getting to the finish. Not be surprised when they hit the finish to kick out of two. You know, it's all about, what is he doing? Is he softening up the leg for the finisher? You know, and I think at even 1.2, when Perfect hits the Perfect Plex and Hart kicks out, Gorilla Monsoon has a great call in commentary. He's like, did he lock the fingers? He's like, right. He didn't lock the fingers. That's why he kicked out. It's great because it's a little thing, you know, but it works. You know what I mean? It's not just, hey, you kicked out of my finisher. It makes sense. No, he didn't actually do the finisher like he normally does. That's why he was able to kick out, you know?
I remember that being called out a lot back in the day, you know, especially if a guy's move was the full Nelson. It's like, oh, if he doesn't have the fingers locked, he's not on. So is Mr. Perfect trying to Brett's ripping his clothes off now.
Yeah. That's a lost start for him, man, the way they call the commentary on it, so you know.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, the exception of like Corey Graves, I'm not really into the commentary today.
I'll tell you who I miss. I miss Mauro Ranallo. He was money.
I love Mauro Ranallo. You just felt his passion and you could tell that he gave a shit.
Dude, he would get you so amped up.
Yeah.
Like, so amped up on a match. Like, just the way he called it, I loved it. I mean, I think the guy on Raw, the new guy, is actually doing a better job than Burke was. You know, he doesn't sound like he's lost out there, which is pretty good. And they put him with good people, so.
And Michael Cole, you know, I still say Michael Cole forces it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's good, but there are times where I'm just like, dude, how long have you been doing this that you keep going up? You know, I think McAfee is very, very entertaining.
Yeah, surprisingly, he is. Mr. Perfect with that singlet just ripped in half now.
Crazy curly fro going on, too. Oh, see, you hit him with the closed fist when Hebner wasn't looking. And he's like, no, I didn't hit him. I pushed him. That's heel stuff. That's real heel shit. That's unbelievable. I mean, not for nothing, dude. You get a good physique for somebody who covered it with a single. This guy, the coach, is fucking useless, too. And how many people did he actually manage? Did he do the Beverly Brothers as well at one point, I think?
I don't remember. I just remember him being with Perfect. The Beverly Brothers. Who was with the Beverly Brothers? Was that? I don't know. Was that the Genius?
Yeah, he was with them for a while. Yeah. So John Tolos was nicknamed the Golden Greek, Canadian professional wrestler. Let's see. Yeah, he it was a brief stint as a coach. He managed the Beverly Brothers and Mr. Perfect, replacing Bobby Heenan. Tolos was then replaced by the Genius as the Beverly Brothers manager, and he left.
Bret Hart just got pushed off the apron by Mr. Perfect, and he took out one of the photographers.
That must have hurt. Oh, sadly, the coach died in 2009 from kidney failure. Rest in peace. Rest in peace, coach. Quite the decorated wrestler, though.
Bret turning the tables now. Near fall.
So how many times are we, you know, what time are we in right there? How many minutes is in that match? Went from what, 16 minutes? So it's about 10 minutes or so before they went for a near fall. Maybe a little bit over that.
Yeah. Wasn't right away, that's for sure.
The old school red, white, and blue ropes. Miss those.
Yeah, I miss everything about these days. Even that SummerSlam logo.
Oh, I love it. I almost bought a retro tee just for this weekend, but my son convinced me to wear our John Cena shirts. So we rented a vacation house. We'll be in North Carolina at the time of SummerSlam that's hitting. So we're going to have a little SummerSlam party at the house.
Nice.
Let me buy an old school SummerSlam shirt. And I bought him the new John Cena one. He was like, let's wear a John Cena shirt. So maybe two guys with green-ass John Cena shirts in the house hanging out.
Oh, jackknife cover here.
Oof.
Yeah, I don't know if I just don't see it, but Mr. Perfect doesn't look like he's hurt. Like, we know he is.
There is a couple times I've actually noticed, and I don't know if he's selling the back for the purpose of the sharpshooter, because I would be perfect doing that. But yeah. At one point, he did try to get up and went back down to a knee and started holding his back. But that also could have been because, he was working the headlock before. That puts pressure on the back, you know. Because, right, right. Everything, I always felt like we just said, like, Perfect and Hart, whatever they did, like, everything they did was deliberate.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So I just kind of feel like, yes, maybe it was the pain, but also maybe to set up the sharpshooter later on with why he taps or says I quit and tap back. Maybe.
Both guys back on the outside.
My thing just keeps stalling out every so often. It's really, Peacock, we got issues, bro. At Wrestling SPC, come see me.
Yeah, Peacock needs to set their game up with this WWE stuff for sure.
I feel like I'm a few seconds behind you. Where are you?
So, 29-17 and counting. Both guys are on the turnbuckle on the outside of it, though.
I got you. I'm there. Catching up. I've seen this match about 10,000 times, so we're good.
Oh, and Brett's caught now. Oh, he was.
Oof. And then Perfect just falls over. But falls into a cover, which is actually pretty cool. It was cool. He, like, fell over, but he fell on top of him. And then Perfect's pissed off that he didn't count. There's Abner, man. Another classic ref.
He just kept pie-facing Earl Abner.
Bush just needs to chill out. Like that guy on the hard camera side trying to get on TV. Look at that heel. A little flick here, a little smack in the face, pulling the hair. You know, these are little things that the crowd are like, fuck you. Now pulling him by the hair for the little oof.
And then Stu and Helen Hart, I think they were born 60 years old, right?
I mean, could you not get them better seats, though? Like, where are they?
Yeah. I remember that. They're pretty far up because
Carlos and Vladimir got better seats than Bret Hart's family does. Like, come on, bro.
And when Bret wins, he goes pretty deep into the crowd to go hug them.
They're like right by the entrance. And I never, I think they have said it before, but why did MSG always utilize that side entrance? And that's like, you know, we've been there for, well, with the exception, I think, of WrestleMania, but I've been there for Royal Rumbles and other stuff like that, and they've used it constantly.
I remember Conrad Thompson definitely asked Bruce Pritchard on his podcast. I don't remember what he said, though.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think I've heard it, too. I don't remember the response, to be honest with you. I think they've changed it now. I mean, I'll let you know when I go to SmackDown. Well, hopefully I'm allowed to go to SmackDown with everything changing, but...
Nice move there by Mr. Perfect, sitting down on the crucifix.
Look at this. Old school, too. Like, just hitting that sleeper before, you know, little things. Like, the way he got into the sleeper, kind of like wrangling the neck, you know?
Yeah. Big chops here. Now, I remember on one of our previous episodes, I talked about a family member of mine who's technically he's my second cousin, who was a wrestler.
Oof.
And he told me that what separated the men from the boys, if you will, was when they would do chops on each other. And he said that Dustin Rhodes used to come into where they were training and would just chop people until they would stop. Like it would be to the point where they'd be like, okay, I've had enough, or he would stop. And that's how they determined, like, who was tough out of them.
God damn. I mean,
here it comes.
You hear the sound of Walter's chops. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. I don't want one of those. Perfect plex and Brett kicked out.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be one of the rare instances of kicking out of a finisher, right? But then let me see if I can hear. I'm going to put the sound on because I'm a little bit behind you.
Has he got the fingers locked?
No. Does he have the fingers locked? No. And then Heyman says, nobody is kicked out of there. See, I think it's crazy.
Nobody has ever kicked out on the perfect play.
It's like, look at the coach, blah, blah, blah. But he didn't lock the fingers. That's amazing. You know, that little thing, commentary goes a long way in helping a match when you're watching it on TV, dude.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely it does.
Nowadays, it would just be like, yeah, I hit my finisher full bore. I have my fingers locked, but you're still going to kick out anyway. And I think it might have been the first time I've ever seen somebody kick out of a finisher like that, honestly.
Kicking, yeah, especially in these times, it didn't happen a lot.
No, and now it's just far too commonplace. It's probably one of my biggest pet peeves in
nice vertical suplex. Yeah,
current wrestling generation is of just kicking out of finishes.
It is a pet peeve, and it just makes the finishes meaningless.
Yeah,
inside cradle. Now Brett's just trying to go for pin after pin here to wear him out.
This was one of his, like, moves. Like, he would do this. He would do a little inside cradle. He would hit the Russian leg sweep, elbow off the second.
Just saw. Yeah. Another just cover.
And this is all on purpose, right? This is all purposeful. You know, stamina starts to wane on you. You're carrying a man who's over 200 pounds on you, you know, so it's all deliberate, you know, it's all for the end. It's all for the end game.
There's that elbow smash.
Always peculiar the way he did it. Now he's getting mad at Earl Hebner, right? I mean, back and forth here. Oh, take it easy, Brett. Little roll through. Here we go. Small package. Oh, man. Right out of the ring.
I think Bret Hart is also Drew McIntyre's favorite wrestler. He said that he models himself after him and says he tries to do the same vertical suplex that Bret does.
That's why me and Drew McIntyre are Paisan. That's my guy. Yeah. Look, I mean, look, if you see here, like, Perfect is, like, favoring the back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, again, it could be for the match purposes, you know? But here, very, like, kicking out the leg, you know?
Nope, nobody did that like Mr. Perfect.
Right. You're flipping over your leg being kicked out. It's amazing. Look at the way he's selling it, though, you know? Like,
oh, and there's a shot to the coach.
Fucking coach. You want you to be a manager. You won't say nothing. I like how he just did the slow roll off the apron. he's like, you're not going to say anything. You're just going to blow a whistle every time you're out there.
Oh, he stomped right on his balls.
Good stomp. Good stomp.
You ever notice Earl Hebner, how slow he counts when he counts to three?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know what it is? Because he does this little, like, hand flail. You guys can't see this. I'm showing him. But, like, when he does this, he goes, like I don't know how to do it. Like, that little hand flail when he counts.
Yeah. Sometimes when I watch, I'm just like, count to three already. Oh, here comes that reversal now. Catches the leg, and he's going to put him in the sharpshooter.
Beautiful. Not a perfect sharpshooter, but a good sharpshooter nonetheless. You know, Great finds the leg. He kind of comes over and he holds it back.
And it's over.
Beautiful counter. He pulls it back. He's been working on the back and the legs all night. And he tapped and quit before he even got it on fully.
Yeah.
And he hits it. Here's the famous Earl Howard Finkel. All right. goes off a singlet for good measure. Leaving him in only his tights. I mean, that got to be a bucket list thing, right? Having Howard Finkel call it, say and new when you win a title.
Yeah, absolutely. There was no announcer like Howard Finkel at all. Bret Hart, Intercontinental Champion for the first time.
This would start a nice, pretty lengthy reign.
Yeah, he'd lose it to the Mountie.
Yeah, I mean, offer a transitional champion just so he could lose it to
Roddy Piper.
Roddy Piper for Piper and Bret Hart to have a dynamite fucking match.
Yeah, an awesome match at WrestleMania 8. Yeah, he won out for days.
Oh, rest in peace to him. He passed away a couple years, more than a couple years ago. Unbelievable. I mean, this is a great match. This is me. This is like, I remember seeing this match and being like, wow, this match was fun. I'm a little kid at this point, you know? Maybe 91, what are we, six, 7 years old? Right? Yeah, I remember watching it over and over and over again. And I still watch this match every year. So whenever I start doing like my little, like I said, little tentpole events, like to watch matches from specific pay-per-views. And I always start with this one. Always. Because it's one of my all-time favorites. That Intercontinental title, to me, is probably my all-time favorite title. I currently have the replica, but with the white strap.
Oh, that's a good one, too. And I've always loved the IC look, that old look. I'm glad. I was happy when Cody Rhodes brought it back.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how I'm feeling about this new one, to be honest.
I don't hate it. I don't love it either. I think they could have added some color to it, maybe, instead of just being a solid black. You know, but yeah. Then this one's a solid black strap with the gold, you know. Doesn't bother me as much as the new U.S. title bothers me.
I don't like the new U.S. title. I think it's too big and awkward.
I'm talking about freaking awkward as hell. All right, so that was that. SummerSlam 91.
Season 4, episode 1.
Yeah, you're right. I'm totally off. What am I saying? Thank you so much. Fucking Peacock here. All right. So, I mean, listen, one of my favorites, one of my all times, I think that's definitely the best match in the card that night. It's definitely not the match made in hell or heaven.
No, it's definitely, without a doubt, it's the best match of SummerSlam 91.
Absolutely. So where are we headed to for yours?
So we are headed to SummerSlam 2002, which is, according to Peacock, season 15, episode 1.
Oh, my God. Good thing I found it. Thank God you said that.
We are going to watch Triple H versus Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels' first match back since 98, WrestleMania 14, from his back injury. 4 years it took for him to come back. And this, first of all, this is one of my favorite SummerSlams, period. I think from top to bottom, this SummerSlam is just amazing. Every match was good. Every match you wanted to watch. Brock Lesnar beat The Rock for the Undisputed title this night. Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio kick it off with a great match. But really what took the cake here was the return of Shawn Michaels. And I guess what makes it personal for me, as I try to fast forward to it, what makes it personal for me is that Shawn Michaels is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And I remember being really hyped when he came back. He came back with the NWO. Obviously, that fell apart. They pretended like it didn't exist because it fell apart. And then Triple H turned on Shawn Michaels, and then you knew what was going to happen from there, right? Shawn Michaels was going to actually wrestle. And the fact that he came back after 4 years, it's a street fight. Shawn Michaels has jeans and a tank top on and did not miss a beat. Like he had wrestled the night before. Yeah. It's one of the most incredible things you'll ever see in the wrestling world, in my opinion. And it started his full return to wrestling. And I do remember Michael Cole saying something during an interview that he felt like Shawn Michaels became Shawn Michaels, the showstopper, the main event, all that stuff, at this night when he came back. And then in the years that led to his retirement. And I kind of agree with him. Like, yeah, Shawn Michaels was great in the 90s. But when he came back at SummerSlam 02, which I think was in New Jersey. Was it New Jersey or Long Island?
Yeah. I'll check for you right now. Actually, I think it was Long Island. You're right.
Yeah. So when he came back,
Nassau Coliseum.
Nassau Coliseum, right. So when he came back and he put on a hell of a show, stole him and Triple H stole the show on a stacked card. And it was his first match in 4 years from a severe injury. And all the, you know, learning later, all the personal problems he was going through. It's, you know, it's an inspirational story. It's a great story. And it cemented from this point on in his career, cemented him as, in my opinion, maybe the best in-ring performer ever.
I mean, this last run that he did when he came back from the injury, probably more significant, just because the high quality of matches he was having, the feuds he was having, this kind of kicked it off. I remember hating because Triple H and him came out to the DX music, and I was like, oh, they're reuniting, and then he turned on him, and I was like, son of a bitch. And at the same time, I was like, wow, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And think about, look at this card. I just looked it up as you were talking. Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio, and that's the opening match.
That's the opening, and they had a great match, too.
Jericho, Edge and Eddie Guerrero, the Un-Americans, Christian Lance Storm against Booker T and Goldust. Oh, Booker T and Goldust, underrated tag team, by the way. And you got an IC title match with Rob Van Dam and Chris Benoit. The random match, which I don't even remember this being on the card, of Undertaker against Test.
Yeah, well, Test was part of that Un-American group, so it was the Un-American versus the American Badass.
Ah, yes. And then, of course, you have this street fight, which you're about to watch. And then the main event was Brock Lesnar and The Rock, which is crazy.
It's a stacked card.
Yeah, I mean, that match is a good match in itself as well. Very stacked card. And this has the longest time of them all, 27 minutes, 20 seconds. Next would be the main event. Actually, no, not the main event. It's the RVD and Chris Benoit one. But, yeah, and I totally agree here. When you're talking about it sucks the way he had to go out. You think you'd never see him again. And he comes back and arguably just has probably the best, now I want to say the best success, but in terms of like matches, some of the best work of his career. You know, like he would tear it up here with Triple H and he would have a great match. And then, you know, he would go on to really get that, you know, Mr. WrestleMania moniker with the matches he had with Kurt Angle and, of course, Undertaker. You know, winning the first Elimination Chamber, which we watched, if you go back to a little archives and stuff like that. This was the run for me, and I agree. Like, this cemented him as, like, the guy. You know what I mean? One of the best in-rings we've ever seen before. And this match, too, being an unsanctioned street fight, you know, he chooses Triple H as his opponent to come back. This right here is major, and it's pretty brutal. And coming out with the pants and the wife beater, or the tank top, excuse me, and Triple H coming out in full wrestling gear, like, you know, again, the psychology starts from the beginning. Shawn Michaels is ready for a fight.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a match for him anymore, which is great. But let's start this off. Where are we at? What are we doing time wise?
So we can start, I guess, at the start of the promo.
Let's go 3, 2, 1. In there. That was just up with GM at the time. He really jumped high for that pedigree, too.
He took it very weird.
She's in the back. She got like jumped or something like that.
Wow. Somebody get help. Somebody go and get some help.
Triple H is a pretty decent actor here, though.
Yeah.
The only thing I know for sure is that the guy jumped me from behind. John, I swear to you, and I swear in front of all
of
you.
I've had that shirt that he's wearing there, that white shirt.
Steve, yeah. Find out who did this. That person is a marked man.
There's one of the worst security cameras I've ever seen.
You're damn right it was me, Sean. I was trying to prove a point that you are weak. You are vulnerable.
I recognize that I'm not in the best shape right now. The doctors have told me I'm in full recovery. They say I'll be 100%, 100% by, say, SummerSlam.
I'm not going to sanction your match at SummerSlam. Officially, your match will never happen. But it will happen, Eric.
Oh, man, we're getting a nice rock music here. These do some great. They still do great. The production's always top notch.
Yeah, they've always done great little packages here, package promos.
Just to see you fall, I'll make you fear me.
I mean, Triple H is at the top of his game here. So it's a great return partner. He's your friend, you know you can trust him. You have to have gritty too, right? First time in 4 years.
What does Shawn Michaels have left in his tank? Face facts! You can't wrestle anymore! You're done! It's over! Cripple your ass! BK is dead! He's dead! Shawn Michaels at the game! Non-sanction! I will
fight. Sounds like saliva. Is that saliva?
I don't know.
My legs are gone. You won't forget me. Forget me.
Forget me. Forget me. All right, I'm gonna hit it there. We got that nice little musical package to get you all amped up. All right, we have it here. I actually just looked up too the star rating for this match. Shawn Michaels and Triple H, 4.25. Best rating of the night, and rightfully so. I really would love to talk to him and be like, what gets you 5 stars? Does it have to be in the Tokyo Dome? I don't know. I don't know.
I hear Shawn Michaels coming out first. Ton of confetti.
I mean, it's like, welcome back. You know, you get all that. Get a little celebration. You know, who knows if he was going to come out?
His jeans and tank top there, and his chaps too. Can't forget the chaps.
The chaps are always great. you know, guys, little Philippines 4:13, little Bible verse there on you. So looking back at it too, Mr. Perfect Bret Hart 4 stars, 91. So this one edges it out 5.25.
He does have his own unique system, that's for sure.
I mean, for sure, yeah. I mean, it makes me laugh here. I mean, we talk about coming out with the jeans and stuff. Definitely ready for a fight. It does make sense. But, you know, to then return with the doo-doo brown tights.
Yeah.
He'll never live that down.
No.
You know what I hate about it, too? In that year's Raw versus SmackDown game, he came back with the doo-doo brown pants, and I couldn't stand it.
Yeah, I couldn't stand it either.
I didn't take him deliberately. Those pants. And you couldn't edit the costumes either at the time, so it was like, oh. Terrible.
Yeah, we were stuck with that awful look. But he looks great.
I am looking forward to the 2K22. I heard that from what I'm reading, a lot of the release guys will be staying in the game. So definitely got to get it.
Yeah. I mean, they've had a long time to definitely make it better and you know, revamp it. And I'm interested to see what the roster is going to look like. I'm interested to see anything about it at this point. We haven't really gotten a whole lot.
It's not a big stretch to say it'll probably be better than last year. Oh, 2 years ago.
It's not a stretch at all. don't have a PS5 yet, so I hope it's not exclusive, but we'll see.
Nah, I think it'll be all right. Here we go. Fantastic entrance. Triple H, the Motorhead song, one of my personal favorites. Triple H, one of my all-time favorites, though. It's fantastic.
I find it absolutely crazy that there are people that still say that he was nothing more than a mid-card level.
I know. And I love when they say, too, that he would have been nothing if he didn't marry Stephanie. That's
not true.
Fucking pisses me off to no end. Because, like, to me, that shows you know absolutely nothing about wrestling. I'm sorry. Right. As a fan, nah, you don't know.
He was set up to be a star. Remember, he was supposed to win King of the Ring 96.
Right. They were grooming him from the moment he signed in WWE.
Right. And
he paid them tenfold with the amount of matches, his you know, being a ring general. I mean, is he a politician backstage? Probably. Everybody is.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're trying to fight for your spot. It's what he the moniker he uses in NXT. You're not there to earn a spot. You're here to take a spot. You know what I mean? And that's what he wanted. And he stepped up to it. You know, Shawn Michaels goes down with the injury. He leads DX. He becomes a world title contender. You know, I'd be happy to put anybody on these freaking any matches from Triple H and show you something. It's just crazy. He's the whole package. Had the physique, had the promo.
He has it all, certainly. And he is one of the greatest of all time to do it, regardless of what anyone says, in my opinion.
I would say that he's severely underrated because of the amount of hate that he gets. I think he's one of the most underrated heavyweight champions of all time because of the amount of hate that he gets. And I might be alone in that sentiment, but I really think because no one gives him enough credit as to what he did during that time. I mean, think about who he came up with. Comes up with Shawn. He's in the Attitude Era from the beginning with Austin and Taker and Rock. You know what I mean? He carries it into Ruthless Aggression with Evolution. You know what I mean? Like he transitioned from the new generation to the Attitude Era to the Ruthless Aggression Era. He's probably the one who transitioned to all three eras into this, you know, modern day, I guess you would call it PG era.
Yeah. And it wasn't, I mean, this is SummerSlam 02, so it's August. And remember, we can't forget that earlier in that year, he came back from his, you know, big quad injury to a huge ovation at MSG.
Yeah.
Wins the Royal Rumble, wins the title at WrestleMania, drops it to Hogan the next month, and was a face for a while, and then turned heel, you know, strictly for this program.
I hated that he did that big comeback, won the Rumble, beat Jericho, only to lose to Hogan the month after. I remember hating that so much.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked longer runs, especially, you know, his should have gone a little longer because of what it meant. But, I mean, Hogan's return was huge, too. So I guess I could see why they did it. There's a clothesline on the outside. Yeah. Shawn Michaels knocking down Triple H.
Shawn not missing a beat here, man.
It's really crazy to see. Like, I'm sure he trained and, you know, got the ring rust off as much as he could, but I'm sure it's also a very different thing to do it for real, you know, what they're doing here in front of a crowd when it's, you know, when it's showtime. And it looked like he didn't lose any time at all. It looked like he was wrestling all those 4 years that he wasn't.
Right.
Those cowboy boots. Imagine getting kicked in the face with those.
No, thank you.
And I think this is the first time that he wrestled as a married man, too, right? And in front of his son.
Was he?
Yeah, because I think he married his wife way after his injury.
Gotta love the convenient weapons underneath the ring.
Garbage can to the head. I mean, it's safe to assume that it's a street fight with weapons and stuff to try to help mask whatever limitations he would have, but
yeah, because in the event that he really couldn't go,
right, yeah,
up, he could be gonna hit you with a chair for like 20 minutes and it'll make it work.
But he clearly didn't need that. Setting up a sweet chin. And there's a big backbreaker from Triple H going right to work on the back. And look, it's Earl Hebner again.
No, different outfit this time. You don't get either, though. The things that make me cringe when, like, these guys come back from major injuries, like when he takes the backbreaker onto the chair.
Oh, yeah.
I remember being like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? Like, one of those, like, oh, my God. You know, like, I couldn't believe it. Because it was, like, it was bad. Like, same thing, like, when Daniel Bryan came back. Anytime he took some type of, like, blow to the head, I'd be like, oh, dude, please.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same way, too. Like, even with, like, Edge coming back.
Every time with his neck and stuff like that.
Even watching Christian in AEW, like, I just hope he doesn't take a wrong shot to the head. And they don't seem to ban headshots in AEW.
They don't give a fuck about head injuries, apparently, because they'll take fucking unprotected shots with chairs all the time as unsafe motherfuckers. Whatever. shout out to Christian, though, the new Impact champion being Omega last Friday, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the story about this match is the back. You know what I mean? That's what he came back from. That's what, you know, put him out in the first place. Of all things, a back body drop onto a casket from Taker. But still, you know, like, still able to come back from it. So, like, working on the back, like, me personally, like, every time he takes a back break, I'd be like, oh, goddamn, I hope that's not the one.
And again, this goes back to what we were saying with the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect match. Triple H is going to work on his back. Everything he's going to do is going to have meaning, and it's all organic. You know, you don't watch this match. There's nowhere where you can pick out what they're going to do next.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, in today's matches, you can tell what they're going to do next because they're always setting up for it. Here, you don't know what he's setting up for. It's just organic wrestling.
Absolutely.
Dropping the elbow on the back, and Triple H with the crotch chop.
He was incredibly tan.
Yeah, I guess according to Eric Bischoff, you have to be tanned if you're going to be in the main event.
I mean, that's what happened with Sting, I guess.
I guess that means I would never be in the main event because I don't like the sun. And here comes the chair now. Triple H going to right to the back.
Oh, I hate that. Absolutely hate it.
And speaking of commentary, here we have Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. And to me, there was nobody that told a better story than Jim Ross from commentary.
Pinnacle, probably the best commentary team. I always loved Gorilla and Bobby Heenan as well.
Of course, yeah. They were great, too.
They were fantastic, man.
And Tony Schiavone, too. I mean, he's up there for me, at least.
You know, Schiavone doesn't get enough credit during his WCW run. He was very good. I got to say, though, there are some times in AEW where I feel like he's just phoning it in, though.
I think him and Jim Ross both don't give a shit about AEW. And you can tell when they're calling their matches. It's just like they don't care. Oh, knee to the face by Triple H, that classic move that he does.
Think about this. After this match, he would return full-time 3 months later at Survivor Series, win the world title, and would wrestle for another 8 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. But you know what always bothered me about his run? Is that he had the world title once for a month.
Yeah.
And never got it again. Yeah, he wrestled for it a bunch of times, but never won it again. I always wondered why. I mean, I'm sure it's timing and stuff like that, but
I think because he ran into runs from Lesnar. He ran into runs from Cena when he was at the height of it. And I also think, too, and I don't know, this is just strictly my opinion, but a guy like Michaels never needed the world title again. It would have been nice for him to have another run, don't get me wrong. But for him, it was all about, like, having those great matches. And you know, like, he had great title matches with Cena, great title matches with Jericho. That Jericho feud is really good.
Yeah.
When Jericho returned, he was doing that more serious character.
Mm-hmm. That ladder match from No Mercy.
Right, exactly. Beautiful. Like, that's a beautiful match. That's an awesome match. You know, him and Jericho had that feud. He had great matches with Angle. You know, he had constant, really just high quality matches. And the work rate never declined.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was always high quality matches. It's not like it was like, oh man, and he's he's at the tail end of his career. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he needs to stop. Like, I never found myself questioning Shawn Michaels.
Maybe only when he came back for Crown Jewel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, oh, geez. That match is just a disaster all the way around, though.
Yeah. We hear now Shawn Michaels is busted open. Triple H has the upper hand now, just beating the shit out of him.
Yeah, like he took the belt off.
Whipping him with the belt.
Meet him in the face a little bit.
You know what speaks to, you know, going back to Triple H's talent and what people say about him. Another thing that speaks to me on how great Triple H was and still is. My dad is not really a big wrestling fan at this time. You know, maybe from like 2000 until around this time, he was interested in what was going on and watching it. And I remember him sitting there and we were watching it and he goes, I don't know what you call it that wrestlers have, but Triple H has it. And that's somebody who's not really like a wrestling hardcore fan like that, that can notice that Triple H is the guy.
Right. That's the real measuring stick, right? If you watch with somebody that doesn't watch on a regular basis, or maybe doesn't watch it at all, and they can say like, oh man, this guy's really good.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you know, too.
Triple H got that sledgehammer.
Infamous sledgehammer.
And I remember, were you at my house? Did we watch this together?
I don't remember. I don't remember watching this live. I remember watching a replay after the fact, but I could be wrong here. Because I remember being so mad that I missed it. I must have been away or something like that at the time. But, like, I remember just being, like, pissed.
Here's a move you don't see a lot anymore, an abdominal stretch.
Does anybody do wear down hold anymore? I mean, seriously. No. Nobody wants to wear down a body part. All right, we're putting pressure on the back. It all goes back to the back.
And legal, too. Triple H holding onto the rope to apply pressure, and it's legal.
It's unsanctioned, so he could do that.
Yep, but Earl Hebner pushes him anyway.
Yeah, well, because Earl's probably confused. Hey, this is a good time where commentary should intervene, which I'm sure they did. We have it on mute right now. But it's like, you know, if Jim Ross is like, it's an unsanctioned match, what do you mean? Why are you pushing? You know, or Jerry Lawler, who's like, the, you know, normally the heel, the heater commentator, you know? And here's Orr Hudden. I was going right back at the wrestlers. He didn't give a shit.
Remember that storyline they did when the referees went on strike?
Yeah.
They had like Harvey Whippleman as a referee.
And then, like, didn't they beat, like, the referees would come out and beat up like the scab referees? It's amazing to me how Earl Hebner would end up getting let go, him and his brother, because they were selling counterfeit merchandise or selling merchandise?
I think they were taking the merchandise, the official merchandise, and selling it for their own pocket. And that's what got them fired.
That's crazy. You know, how long were you there and you got fired for that? You know, he worked from 88 to 2005. Unbelievable.
Wow. And then after that, he went to TNA.
Crazy, right?
Shawn Michaels now perched up on the top rope.
He's with AEW now, Hebner.
Yeah.
Along with everybody else.
Oh, that Triple H pushing Earl Hebner into the rope to trip up Shawn Michaels there. It's just classic stuff. And here comes another chair shot to the back.
That's heel shit right there, right? Kick the ref into the rope to save yourself, you know? Normally now they would take the move and, you know, just kick out.
Oh, here comes that spot you were talking about.
It's the backbreaker, right? This is cringeworthy shit right here.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yep. Oh. And even with all of this punishment that he's dishing out, how many times has he gone for a pinfall?
None, exactly. Because it's not about the win. It's about the fight. Right. He wants to kick his ass. Right. He wants to cripple him. He wants to send him back into retirement. You know, HBK wants revenge. You know, his best friend turned his back on him. It's not about the win. Now he just goes for a pin, you know, whatever. But it's about kicking his ass, both of them. You know what I mean? That's the story of the match here, you know? Besides HBK coming back after 4 years off, it's like, no, I'm going to beat the shit out of you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like, is he going to do another?
On the closed chair.
Side slam on the closed chair.
Okay, that hurt. That got to hurt. I don't care how fake it is. That shit still got to hurt. So in 2005, Earl Hebner was fired from WWE for selling WWE merchandise without permission.
Yes.
His twin brother would also be released in connection with these events. Supposedly, he had partial ownership in a store, a memorabilia store in St. Louis, that he would get the merchandise and sell out of. But to avoid negative publicity, the store bought him out and then released a press statement saying that they only ever received merchandise from licensed distributors and not, you know, purchased through him. That sucks.
Sure does. Did it to himself, though. Remember when we used to go to, and for the listeners, this is just us reminiscing about Island Trains, where they had all types of wrestling shit there.
Yeah,
great stuff there.
It's a lighting fixture store now. Terrible. Shout out to Island Trains. There is a great
store.
Shameless plug, but there is a great store. They have locations in Queens and in Long Island called the Wrestling Universe. I recently took my son there. If you're really looking for some good figures or some back-in-the-day nostalgia shit, I actually bought my son mini figures that I never knew that they sold of Savio Vega and Vader. They have really like old-school Hasbro figures, old-school Jack specific, and even the new ones now. It's a really small shop. You walk in, the guy always has wrestling playing on a TV in the back. It's really good. Signed pictures. They do a lot of signings there. I'm going to take my son to go see Mick Foley in October. It gives me the Island Train vibes, man.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's a good person to go see, too. Yeah. Oh, sweet chin right into the chair. Back in the Triple H's face.
And what a cowboy boot on, no less. How is he not... How did he not twist an ankle? There's no ankle support in those fucking cowboys.
And I'm sure they're heavy too.
Yeah. Ugh. Good one. You know what I like too? Two things. One, hits the sweet chin music. He collapses because of the punishment he's taking, but rolled onto his stomach to prevent a pinfall. Remember that? It's the little things, y'all. It's the little things.
And now Triple H is busted open. Something we don't see anymore, unless it's by accident.
Well, how about if you watch this past Monday, somebody was busted open. Oh, my God, it's escaping me. Oh, I apologize. It was NXT. Ilya Dragunov got busted open. Looks like it was hard way, too.
Did he win?
He won this past Tuesday. He lost last week to Pete Dunne. But he beat Roderick Strong in a very good match, by the way.
So who's the UK champ?
Walter's the UK champ. Him and Dragunov actually have a match this Sunday at TakeOver, which I think Dragunov will win.
Yeah, I think so too.
If you ever watch, if you get a chance on NXT UK, watch their first match. It's fantastic.
And here we go, classic Shawn Michaels here with the nip up.
How you doing?
That body drop.
Fucking bladed deep for that that cut right there, huh?
Yeah, I think so. He's bleeding terribly. He's got the chair now himself.
Sometimes you need that blood in the match. I mean, I understand now why they don't, but when you're in a match like this, unsanctioned, or like a big time Hell in a Cell, like a cap off to a feud, oof.
Yeah. I remember Kevin Nash said you can't have a hardcore match without some juice.
Right.
Over the top to the outside goes Triple H. Triple H with the long hair.
I miss the long hair. It's my guy.
Actually, doesn't look bad with the shaved head.
No, he doesn't. I think I'm impartial to the long hair.
And now Shawn Michaels has the belt whipping Triple H.
So he's giving it right back to him. Giving it right back to what, you know, doing nothing. He's going to have a little, you know, his little revenge down here. So again, they're outside. It ain't about the covers. It ain't about the pin. It's about the beatdown. You know, it's getting one back.
Oh, look at that, like, little puddle of blood there.
Oh, yuck.
Right on the floor.
Oh, it's all in his hair. His hair just looks like a wet mop at this point. Ugh. Somebody get the Clorox spray. Spray that now.
Yeah, Michael Cole jumping out of the way. Into the crowd he goes. Did he just pull? He pulled off Hugo Savinovich's shoe.
Great. It never showed any respect to the fucking Spanish announce.
Spanish announce team.
They both definitely got sprayed with blood, by the way. Cole and Taz, when he flung his hair back like that. Nice boot.
Shawn Michaels jogging around the ring.
Just showing him. Oh, I still nice got move. It. Look at that. Braun Strowman got it from HBK.
Now breaking out the ladder.
That blood is intense, man. That's a pumper right there, dude. Look, it's just everywhere. It's all in his hair. He's just leaving blood spots everywhere he goes when he looks down. Got some good color on there, bro. Talking to the crowd about the ladder. I like that, too. I missed that Taz shirt, that orange 13. Didn't you have that shirt?
I did have it. Back when I thought Taz was cool.
I just recently had to box up a whole bunch of like wrestling shirts. Ones that I use them now to work out because they're just too big on me now. But, you know, our dearly departed friend Andrew, rest in peace to the Juice Man, every time he used to live around the corner from me, every time he used to order shirts by like, he used to order maybe like 5-6 shirts at a time. And I used to just like be like, dude, you got to stop ordering so many shirts. and he would come over and be like, oh, I bought you one too. I have so many shirts that he bought me that I can't get rid of them now. But no,
what's not?
A bunch of classics and stuff like that. I recently just had to box them up and put them in my attic because I needed room for like, you know, regular clothes.
Yeah. I had a bunch and then I think I just wound up getting rid of them because they got wear and tear and, you know, growing out of them and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Eventually they cracked and stuff. The shirts now, I think compared to when we were kids, they're such better quality now.
Yeah.
Because I still have a few from a few years ago. I was a lot bigger back then, obviously. They're like 3X and 4X. And they're really good. I just use them as like workout shirts now, but they look like dresses, so it's kind of hard to wear them out in public. How to buy some new ones for this upcoming SmackDown pay-per-view. Some classics, but
oof. Yeah, I think the only one I have now, I bought for SummerSlam 15, was it? The Fatal 4-Way at Barclays. Brock.
Oh, yeah, Roman. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have it's a Brock Lesnar t-shirt that I bought. And that's all I have right now.
Brock Lesnar, of all people, huh?
Yeah, well, it's the only one Hot Topic had.
Good.
I didn't mind, though. I like Brock.
Sometimes, like, when I go to the event, I end up just throwing some money down and getting one. That's how I ended up getting my Monday Night Messiah Seth Rollins one.
Superplex coming up on the top rope, yeah.
This crimson mask. Triple H, man. Respect, bro.
Man, what a great match.
Kind of threw him off there. Like,
yeah.
Necessarily a suplex. It was like a kind of flung him off the top rope. It was weird. And that's one. I think that has to be Michael's first cover, right?
Yeah, I think
that's
so.
That's the first time I see him actually go for the pin. And what are we like? More than halfway through this match. This match is 27 minutes long. I mean, that's pretty incredible. And there's another near fall right there too. So now we're actually going for the win, you know.
Triple H now looking for something on the outside. The steps.
Running the sledgehammer, that's for damn sure. I mean, right now at this point, they're really selling the fact that they're just beating the shit out of each other. You know, Triple H is limping. He's holding his, you know, kind of holding his wrist to his chest. Got the blood just pouring out of his fucking head at this point, right? I mean, Shawn Michaels there too. Like, he's limping. He's kind of looking around. He's delirious.
Drop toll hold. Triple H eats the steps.
This is perfect, right? This is a great move too. You're tired. What can you do here, right? I mean, you drop toll hold right into the steps. That's Shawn Michaels right there calling a spot to Triple H, if you didn't notice.
It must be this table spot. That's what he's going for.
Yeah. Oh, he landed. His foot kind of landed in between the rungs of the ladder right there. Could have broken an ankle right there. Shit. I would love to meet the guy that's in charge of loading the weapons underneath the ring. I would love to talk to that guy, right? Like, where do you get your tables from? Do you make them in-house? How about the trash cans? Can we talk about those? Who the fuck thought the pie pans were fucking popular for a while when they did hardcore matches? Like, we were like, yeah, let's hit each other with this pie pan. It's going to bend over your face. Might as well use aluminum pans at that point.
Yeah, I guess, well, you know, aluminum bends easy, but I don't want to take a shot to the face with it.
I don't want to get hit with anything.
Oh, fire extinguisher.
That too. What'd you look at? I always wanted to, like, why'd they put the cooler full of drinks under the thing? Like, does Jim Ross randomly get up halfway through a pay-per-view and goes to get a bottle of water?
Oh, yeah, I think somebody brings it to him, probably. Shawn Michaels up top.
I know Shawn Michaels said,
big splash through the table.
I love the when he calls himself crazy for going. Yeah. That's awesome. Not the elbow, too. Just, he's like, eh, fuck it. Whatever. I'm crazy. Good shit. Good spot right there. Great spot.
Oh. What would you think? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, to think that there's, you know, with this pay-per-view, there's still one more match, Rock and Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, but it's going to be hard. I mean, it was hard to top this.
Hard to follow, yeah.
The match didn't top it. It was tough to follow, but it still was a solid match at the end.
It was a good match, and I remember Rock getting booed heavily.
Yeah, and that's why he came back as a heel. So he would lose that match and not come back until January when he challenged Hogan. He went heel, but yeah. I mean, purposely, because they booed him out the building.
Yep.
Little ladder, doing a little climbing the ladder action again. He's just like, yeah, I'm psycho.
Probably gonna do the elbow off the top there. Not all the way at the top, but high enough.
He says, I love each and every one of you.
Oh, I nailed it.
Michael's elbow drop, probably my second favorite after the Macho Man.
And Shawn Michaels getting right up.
He's getting fucking amped right now. He's like, let's go. Who wants it? Not for nothing, though. Credible physique coming back after 4 years, too, man. He was ready. He was ready for this match.
He was.
Crowd is amped up right now. Everyone's on their feet, which you don't see anymore. No one's excited. You got signs in the arena, which you don't see anymore, really.
Catches sweet. Sweet chin goes for the pedigree.
Isn't this the ending sequence here?
This is the finish right here. Jackknife covered by Sean.
Boom.
And a surprise finish, but a good one.
But you know what, though? It was the way it had to go, I think, honestly.
Yeah, to continue their feud and stuff.
Right. He got the sneak win, but they just beat the shit out of each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it continues the feud, you know? It's not like, oh, I beat the shit out of him. I got my pound of flesh. It's over. It's like, no, this isn't over. You got lucky, you know?
We're about to see Triple H comes up from behind with the sledgehammer.
I like how he gave the Earl Hebner a nice kiss at the end. Like,
yeah.
He put, thank God. That was good. There you go. Got to get that heat back, brother.
Oh. And so, and after all of that, you know, like Shawn Michaels coming back 4 years, putting on a hell of a match, winning the match, and instead of giving him his moment in the sun, letting him like soak it in and cheer and celebrate, they leave it with him lying in the middle of the ring after Triple H hits him with the sledgehammer. And
yeah,
just good storytelling.
And I believe too, he's out for a little bit after this until he comes back, and then they continue, and then they carry it into Elimination Chamber, and then eventually into a Hell in a Cell or
Three Stages of Hell. Yeah,
Hell actually, which another one you don't see anymore, which would be great. I mean,
we're seeing it. We're seeing it with Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, I wish it would. I wish it was still called Three Stages of Hell though. It had the moniker to it. It's just so much better. Yeah. Than what they're doing. Look at that doctor with his giant lab coat. Like, okay, we get it. You're a doctor.
Triple H laughing at what he did.
Yeah, coming out. He's limping. He's hurt, but smiling because he got the upper hand at the end, right? He got the last laugh, you know?
Yeah, saying to himself.
At least in my opinion, right? You had to end it like that, get the heat back, just because it was a surprise win. It wasn't that he, you know, they beat the shit out of each other, but it wasn't that he beat him and pinned them clean. It was a surprise one, so now he's pissed off even more now. But at least he got the upper hand. Yeah, you won, but I won the war, essentially. Right?
Right, yeah. And then, remember the next night, Eric Bischoff awards him with the world title.
Right. Because so. Lesnar takes off. But when it's all said and done, it's like, yeah, we got you. And then he gets carried off on a stretcher, like, damn, after. And it also puts it gets the audience captivated, because, like, shit, he came back 4 years, now he's taking this shot. Is he even going to come back?
Right. You know? Well, I remember that whole lead-up to Survivor Series of, you know, when Eric Bischoff offered him a spot in the chamber, and he was like, you know, I don't know. And then he finally said yes to do it.
It was a good ending sequence, though, right? Boom.
What a great match. Like, really, really great match.
Fantastic.
Apparently one of my favorites, which is why we're watching it here at SummerSlam.
Now, if you want to get technical, Triple H's arm was up.
You see Shawn being carted off on the stretcher.
Is that a gimmick sledgehammer, you think? Is it like a rubber-coated one, or is it just legit and Triple H and Shawn Michaels fucking did a hell of a job thinking you beat the shit out of him with it?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think it is a real sledgehammer, and Triple H just knows how to use it without killing him.
Unbelievable match.
And there you have it. What a great match. As I said, one of my favorites, probably my favorite SummerSlam match of all time, which is why we watched it. And, I'm glad that we revisited it. And that was SummerSlam Season 15, Episode 1. Very short season.
Or 2002. Whatever you want to, you know. Peacock, we got to talk about some things. We got to talk about some things, my man. I talk about Peacock, it's an entity. Like, it's a person. That's unbelievable. That was you forget sometimes, too, how great these matches are. I mean, I feel like that match in particular is always talked about in terms of greatest SummerSlam matches of all time.
Yeah, it deserves to be recognized as one of them.
I just wish that they would do. I mean, the long-term storylines seem to be like passé almost. It's like, what is, you know? I wish they could build to a feud of this magnitude again. You know?
Yeah, I mean, we did see it with like Drew and Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley. We saw it with Apollo Crews and Big E, where they tried to stretch it out, but I just think it's too boring.
Yeah.
Like, there was no substance there.
It really was. I mean, I don't know. Here's to hoping for some longer term stuff. And the thing is too, it's the storytelling in the match itself, right? Working the back. You know, Triple H being as bloody as it is. And then, like, you know, yes, he won, but no definitive end, because you're going to keep it going. Right. So it's like, there it is, but it's not over. And, you know, there's certain things, like, you know, Triple H going for a cover, you know, over 10 minutes into the match. You know, Shawn Michaels even later in the match. It wasn't just move, cover, move, cover, move, cover, move, cover. It was beat down. Then maybe I'll go for the cover, but the win wasn't what it was about. It was about kicking your ass, you know. And that's shit like this, man, is a lost art form that both companies really need to take note of, not just one or the other. You know, it's
both. Yeah, I agree.
Very, very guilty of doing this. Now, I sound like an old man, but whatever. I digress.
Oh, we are almost.
I would say the question I was going to ask you. The you know most people say the Mecca of wrestling, right, is either New York or Chicago. Most wrestlers say they prefer to work in Chicago just because of the buildings and the crowd and stuff like that. The ones that I've seen, like Austin, love Chicago, for instance. I mean, maybe I'm biased here, but man, New York crowds, when you get there, are pretty good. They could be intense. They could be shit at times, not going to lie.
But yeah, I mean, I just, and it probably is biased because we're from New York and I love New York, but WWE made its name in Madison Square Garden in what, the 50s, 60s, 70s. I mean,
right.
It's synonymous. So it's for me, it is New York.
It seems like AEW is going to make their like Chicago, like their home thing.
Right.
You know, every year I think they're going to do the all out pay-per-view in Chicago or whatever. I mean, listen, I've never experienced a Chicago crowd. I think that's a bucket list thing for myself. I don't know. I mean, I've been in some pretty good New York crowds. I've been in some crap ones too, though. So let me not act like it's the end all be all. But I do gotta say, all right, real quick before we wrap it up, we put a bow on it. Last two questions of the night: does Goldberg beat Bobby Lashley this Saturday at SummerSlam?
I'm gonna say no, but I'm also gonna leave the possibility open that it could happen. But I'm gonna say no.
So my prediction initially was that they were going to just beat each other up and then Big E was going to cash in and win. This way Goldberg doesn't lose and Lashley kind of gets screwed. That was my prediction. And then if you watch, I don't know if you watched Raw this Monday, but like the promo that Goldberg cut was like, I'm doing it for my son. I'm back because I want him to see me wrestle. Now his son's a lot older. And it's like, dude, they're going with the whole superhero sentimental thing before Lashley like interrupted him and stuff. And I'm like, oh God, he's going to win. Is he? Isn't he? I don't know. I feel like he's going to win, to be honest with you.
I wouldn't be surprised if they pull that card and have him win.
Yeah. I would love for him to win and Big E cash in on him anyway. So whatever. Either way, I think that's happening. And Roman Reigns or John Cena, who do you got?
I'm going Roman. I don't know how long John Cena's back for. I don't know what his plan. I know he said he's back for a little bit.
Right.
But we also know that he has commitments to Hollywood, and he even said himself that it's hard to do both wrestling and movies, because when you're an actor and you have insurances, when you sign on with movies, they don't really want you doing other things that could jeopardize their productions.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know how long John Cena is going to be back for, so I don't see him winning the Universal title. I see Roman keeping it. The question is, how long is Roman going to keep it? We're hearing rumors now of maybe him and The Rock at WrestleMania. The Rock apparently is going to be at Survivor Series. Maybe it happens there. I think Roman keeps it.
I think Cena's going to win, to be honest with you.
All right, so then my question, if Cena wins, does this count as him being a 17-time world champion?
Yes.
So you say the Universal title counts as a world title.
It's a world title. It's just old Universal. I mean, the fucking, oh my God, World Wrestling Council, right? WWC, is it Puerto Rico? They call theirs the Universal Championship. They've called it.
Yeah,
it's a world title, right? It's just on the other brand, has a different name. It's a world title. I'd say he's a 17-time world champion. Listen, to be honest with you, Ric Flair's title reign isn't at 16. It's probably more in the 20s because between like the way he, you know, they didn't count the ones that maybe he lost in like, when he was on the road in house shows, like he would famously like lose it and then gain it back like at the end of the weekend. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's probably a lot more than 16. Officially, they counted as 16, whatever. And listen, Ric Flair has given his blessing for Cena to do it. Maybe he doesn't because of that fact, but he's not there anymore. I thought because Cena's on, it looks like he's on through September. Right. So if he wins it, he could always drop it at the next pay-per-view back to Rome. That's why I think it. And it's a nice story coming back. Because here's the thing too, if Cena doesn't win, who's gonna be who's next for Roman? You got to give him some time. Like let Cena win, have the belt for like a month, and then if you even drop it back to Roman to him to say like, yeah, he got it for me, but I got it right back. You know what I mean? Then you could probably maybe build somebody up in the interim. But they have to build somebody up. That's the problem. They're not doing it. You know. So maybe they hold on to Big E's. You know, maybe he holds on to the case for that specific reason. You know.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if both Goldberg and John Cena walk out with the belts, respective belts. But my prediction is that they won't. I see Bobby Lashley and Roman keeping them both.
My prediction is also that Lashley and Goldberg open the show.
Yeah, But I mean, Roman and Cena will definitely be the main event, that's for sure. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the Edge and Seth Rollins match. I think that's it's going to be good, and I think it's probably it's about time Edge gets a big win since his return. So.
Yeah, I mean, but Seth Rollins has kind of been up there in the loss as well, right? He lost at WrestleMania. Is it this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Edge is due, though, to be honest with you. I think that's probably going to be the show stealer, if not the main event. I don't know why, but I am really intrigued by Alexa Bliss and Eva Marie. I want to see if Eva Marie actually gets in there and tries to do something. I'm not expecting it to be crazy good, but other than that, oh, last one. Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly. Who do you have for the finale?
I have Kyle O'Reilly just because of the rumors of Adam Cole leaving and his contract being up. So just based on that, I'm going to go Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. Because he's going to be one of two things. Adam Cole leaves or Adam Cole's going to the main roster. One of
right.
Them. Yeah. So I think that to have him as a send-off for that. I mean, if he's leaving, you put him I could really see NXT having O'Reilly just go two falls nothing. Like two straight. Don't even go to the cage. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That would suck, though.
It would. I'm just saying. You know, as a little like thing. I don't know. I hope he stays, man. He's one of those guys that needs to stay. They need him.
Yeah, I think so. I hope he does.
Especially, you know, having him come up maybe and you know, as a new face, fresh face and shit. Like, let's get it going, man. I don't know, something new. Anyway, lots to unpack. Very exciting weekend. Can't wait. Got two nice things on the horizon. So, as usual, you get these podcasts. This podcast. We have more than one. Where do you get all your wrestling podcasts? It's there. You're searching up Wrestling Guys Podcast. In your search, give us a 5-star review. Leave us a little comment. I don't give a damn what it is. Just leave it there. At Wrestling Guys PC, at Twitter. You got at FPP Show. Did you wrap up your horror movie retrospective by decade thing?
Well, we got we're three parts in. So you can listen to parts 1, 2, and 3. And we got a long way to go because it's ultimately going to be a 10-part series that we're doing.
Shit.
But the latest one compares the years 1982 to 1992, 2002, and 2012, and which year had the better horror movie releases. And you may be surprised by what we think, which one of those years actually wins out.
Oh, beautiful. So you want to head out to the Fans Perspective podcast, hit them up at FPP Show. And if you haven't, hit their archives up. Hit the previous episodes up before you hit the latest one. Nice. Good stuff happening on all accounts. Everything there. Hit us up. Hit that one up. Let us know what's going on. What's your favorite SummerSlam match of all time at Wrestling Guys PC? What is the most underrated SummerSlam match of all time? It's a good one. It's a good topic for discussion. What are we going to think about this weekend? Hopefully we get some dynamite matches. Hopefully we get some surprises. Hopefully, I know Goldberg has said on the bump he has two matches left on his contract. So let's get it. Let's get those two out right now. You know what? Let him win the title. Do two more matches. Let him go. And we're good. Do a rematch on Raw and something on SmackDown. Just let him go. No, listen, not hating on Goldberg. I'm just tired of seeing him. You know, guy's a legend. I get it, but I'm just tired of seeing him. Want to see new faces. But let's get this part timer shit and this over reliance over with. Anyway, I've said a mouthful. Let's wrap it up here. And this has been the Wrestling Guys Podcast. We're gonna talk about wrestling, drink some beers. We just about all out of beers. Stay safe out there. Shit ain't over.